notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the fax ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
Three, two, one. Well, thanks for joining us. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other week here on KRBS.
Those are odd weeks.
Odd weeks, that's correct, because we're a couple of odd guys. My name is Dan Gowrie, along with my co-host.
Another odd person.
Tom Nato. Thanks for joining us today. In case you join us late, this is our third segment of this week's show, and we're interviewing Chuck Smith, who is operating engineer business agent, and we've been talking about the initiatives in California, and we ended the last segment with a local proposition in Yuba County, which is Proposition G, which would bring gambling to Yuba County.
Casino.
Indian casino
and
gambling.
Casino.
Yes. Anyhow, as I said, this is Dan Gowrie along with Tom Nato. And thanks for joining us this week. We'd also like to invite you to take a look at our blog on the internets at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. So we left off last segment where we were talking about Proposition G in Yuba County. So we want to finish that conversation up, and then we want to move on to another event that happened recently of great significance to working people in America and to the labor movement, and that was the Chapter 11 filing of Delphi, which was in the past a subsidiary of General Motors, and a few years ago General Motors spun that off to make a separate company. They recently filed Chapter 11, and one of their one of the proposals under their Chapter 11 reorganization is a plan whereby workers' benefits and wages would be cut substantially. So we'll get to that in a few minutes, but we want to finish up our conversation with Chuck, and he'll be also involved in our conversation on the Delphi Chapter 11 filing. We want to finish.
You mean I don't get to leave?
No, you don't get to leave. We have your ass for another half hour, Chuck. Excuse the euphemism here, but I'm sure you don't mind it, because you want to talk a little bit more about Proposition G here in Yuba County.
Yeah, just Measure G will bring three. Measure G will bring 3,000 jobs to Yuba County, not just a casino, and that's why labor's behind it, supporting it. The what I want to talk about was, it's been very interesting working with the Native American tribe that, again, Maidu have been in the Sacramento Valley for 10,000 years. This is their first exposure as a tribe to a political campaign. And the reason that we have Measure G is that once the tribe gets permission from the Bureau of Indian Affairs to open a casino, it's going to be a hotel resort casino, they have to negotiate with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger has said that he will only negotiate gaming compacts in situations where there's community support for the casino, which is why we have the advisory measure. The but the campaign itself, there's in Yuba County, unfortunately, an impoverished county that has experienced a lot of racism over the years. We have an active Ku Klux Klan organization. At least we did 15, 20 years ago. When
what are we doing up here?
Yeah. So I mean,
cheap rent.
Chuck, you know, there was a. I before we move on to the Delphi story and its implications for workers in America, you were telling us a story on the break briefly, and I'd like you to have you tell it to our listeners about some of your precinct walkers who confronted some people who are opposed to Proposition or Measure G. I keep on wanting to call it Proposition Measure G. Could you relate that story to our listeners, because it's On one level, it's humorous. On another level, it's quite scary, actually.
Well, we've had one skinhead threaten to beat up a guy parked out in Albertsons wearing a Measure G t-shirt. We've had several households where they've told the little brown people to go back where they've come from. Of course, the response there is, we are.
Yeah.
But the...
The little brown people being...
The Native Americans, yes. But one of the workers was wearing a Measure G t-shirt at a local car wash. She was washing her car with one of those spray wands when some guy walked up and said, Hey, you! And she's like trying to ignore him, and he goes, hey, you! And so she turns around, and he says, devil worshiper, I'm a Christian. We're not going to let you heathens build the casino. And she ignored him, and he spit on her.
Jeez.
Landed on her shoe.
Biblically, that would be spat upon.
I suppose. Well, what would you call biblically the pressure washer that she turned on him and sprayed him down pretty good? And of course, when she told that story, she was a loud applause at the campaign headquarters.
Moses' rod.
There you are.
Yeah, there you are. So there you have
Moses. Not Moses.
There you have it. That's Proposition G in Yuba County, California, which election's a little bit, I guess, less than two. What was it, November 1st?
November 8th.
It's November 8th. Okay. Well, that's good. So we got about 2 weeks before that's
decided.
So you have
time to change your mind.
Right. Anyhow, we want to talk a little bit more about a subject we touched on earlier in our segment with Chuck about the Chapter 11 filing of Delphi. And just for a little background, Delphi was used to be a part of General Motors. It would be their automotive parts division. Each one of the big three had a automotive parts division, and I'm not sure about Chrysler, but I know Ford spun theirs off and is now a company called Visteon. A few years ago, General Motors spun off Delphi, and they became separate corporations whose sole customer in Delphi's case, or primary customer anyhow, was General Motors. General Motors has been squeezing Delphi because they have domain really over Delphi, squeezing to get lower cost out of them. So consequently, Delphi and a host of other what are called OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, have actually filed Chapter 11. Another one which I am somewhat familiar with is a company called Collins and Aikman.
Now, with all this squeezing to force prices down, or wages gone down, prices have gone down commensurately, right?
I don't think so, Tom. Although the
slack was picked up by
the workers.
Oh.
And then really, so Delphi filed Chapter 11. I guess it was last week, and they said that they couldn't make money. Well, part of the reason that is not being reported, the reason they can't make any money is because General Motors is squeezing them. So this is kind of a convenient excuse for Delphi to say, look, we can't make any money, so we're going to reduce our wages, we're going to reduce our retirement benefits, we're going to reduce our benefits. And most people haven't really paid attention to this story because this is something to a lot of people, particularly here in the western states, is happening in the industrialized Midwest. But it really does, if you think about it, have far-reaching implications. Before we continue, I just want to say, in several news stories, they being Delphi, in their reorganization plans, are proposing to reduce the workers' wages to about $9 or $10 an hour. They don't break out the hourly wage, but I know their hourly wages are somewhere in the upper teens, low 20s per hour, which is a very good paying job nowadays, and really any time. But what's very clever about it is the Delphi in this case is they won't put what their hourly wages will, but they say, well, with benefits and everything, they're paying the equivalent of $50 an hour, which on the surface you read it, and again, going back to what we were talking about, Joe Sixpack says, well, those guys are making $50 an hour. Well, they're not really making $50 an hour. They're including things like retirement benefits, health benefits, retirement health benefits also, which is another category. And really what we have to look at is that this was really a means by General Motors to drive their prices down and to reduce their wages. Now, am I reading this correctly, Chuck? You're involved in the union movement, labor movement. Am I reading this right, or is this just fabrications in my head?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. The only way the prices for the products ultimately are going to go down is when they've, you know, feel they've taken enough profits. But in the benefit package, typically in any benefit package that's negotiated in a union contract, you have just the things you mentioned. One of the great things that unions have been able to do is to negotiate benefits for health care. What's happening across the United States is now it's costing $6, $7 an hour just for a health care package. And so you tack that on to a retirement package and then a medical and a retiree medical package, and you've added $12, $13 to a labor cost. Now, if wages in the United States for working people raised as fast as they were for the CEOs, the average wage in the United States for a working person would be $25 an hour. So
more.
Well, it would be high.
I was reading the other day that executive pay went up by 450%.
Wow.
Or thereabouts.
Right.
Well, then we say
last few years.
Way,
that's not over a long time.
If the minimum wage went up as much as the CEO, you know, percentage-wise, then you'd be at the minimum wage. You'd be at $25 an hour.
Wouldn't that be a good campaign strategy? Is to tie minimum wage to executive raises? Just say we're linking it to that. If that goes up, there's one of the unions that do that. Isn't it COPS that link it to? There's a union or a group that links its prices to, judges.
Oh.
Right? So they don't have to ask for, that's the group.
What does it cost for a judge? Because I'd like to own a
couple.
Right
now it's about $120,000. That's for a full year. But no, if the cost of living goes up a certain amount, their pay goes up that amount, because the judges don't like to ask for raises, because then you would realize that they're working for the public and they'd have to run for office again, which right. They right now in California don't necessarily have to do.
Right. Anyhow, getting back to the Delphi situation, the thing that most people need to really be aware of is that this if you take this in unison with the recent filings of United Airlines, Delta Airlines, Delphi, these are major corporations with the so-called legacy cost of retirement benefits and retirement health benefits. And basically what's happening here is, first of all, pension plans are kind of a bygone, they're from a bygone era now. They're, you know, we've created this kind of economic Darwinism in this country where you sink or swim on your own, particularly in old age. You know, if you're 65 or 70, you can't work and you don't have money, and circumstances are such that you haven't been able to make money because you haven't a good wage.
The Eskimo theory of government.
Yeah, exactly. They'll put you on a nice berg, cast you out, and let you die out on your own. What's important here to remember is that if this Delphi contract goes through, it's going to be really a, I view it, and I come from the upper Midwest, Detroit specifically, so I'm intimately familiar with this. If Delphi workers agree to or are forced to, or further yet, if they're fired and they have replacement workers at $9 or $10 an hour when these people were previously making maybe $20, $21 an hour, it is going to put a stake, I think, in the heart of not only the UAW, but it's going to give green light for a lot more corporations, and I would not exclude General Motors or Ford or Daimler-Benz, although Daimler-Benz may be a different situation because it's a German-owned corporation and they're slightly different. But I would not be surprised at all to see General Motors and Ford Motor Company, which they have huge legacy costs, declare Chapter 11, if for no other reason to escape their health care benefits. So people need to watch this, because this is something that I think there's a very distinct possibility. Ford was on the rope several times through the years, and I can just attest to that from my own knowledge of it. General Motors has been on the rope several times. But I think this is going to be their out now, is that if United and Delta, which seem to be escaping their responsibilities, their retirement pension responsibilities, If Ford and GM can do this, it's going to do it. And what it means to people who are not even union members, it means all of a sudden the door is now open to slash benefits and wages across the board. And I think it's a part of a broader plan to really shift wealth away from the middle class and obviously the lower middle class and lower class, which doesn't substantially have wealth by definition, and increase the wealth of the upper class. I mean, am I reading this right, or what do you guys think? Go ahead, Chuck.
I think that you're accurately describing what's going on, not just in the United States, but across the globe. And, you know, wealth is concentrated in the hands of very few people. They can get together and discuss these strategies, and every decision that's made, secretly somewhere is. You hire marketing companies to spin your company's benefits to the world and make these companies sound like they care about working people. My wife got a notice. They're doing away with her pension plan. It's going to a 401k plan, and
is she in the private or public sector?
In the private sector.
Okay.
And so she's not, no collective bargaining arrangement, mm-hmm. but in fact, I was surprised to hear this particular company, because I worked for them years ago, even had a pension plan, but they developed one. Well, now it's going to a 401k plan, and it's an opportunity, they said, for her. It's an opportunity in the letter. It's an opportunity to invest in your own future. Now you can invest more of your pay into a 401k plan, because we're restructuring an opportunity. I mean, you know, they don't say we're going to screw you, and that's what the working people understand. They understand when they're getting screwed. Opportunities they get to think about a little bit.
Right. Well, that's just, you know, that's just part of the neocon spin on things. Is like Tom was referencing earlier. You take something, you name it one thing when it actually means the direct opposite. But, you know, I think for working people, this trend is, for people, even people, particularly people, I guess, that are not covered by collective bargaining agreements, this is a scary trend, because basically it's giving the green light to slash benefits, and you have more people making lower wages, and suddenly, people don't have as much leverage when it comes to negotiating higher wages.
Well, I'm going to guess from listening to this that there's a side benefit that if they move to 401ks, is that there's less reason to stay in the same corporation or company or job, so you move around, which allows them to put you back into the market at lower rates, entry rates.
Right, exactly. That you make an excellent point on that, Tom, is, and we were talking during the break, my father, for example, worked for Ford Motor Company for 40 years, and nowadays, people, if they work 15 or 20 years at a corporation a corporation, private enterprise specifically, that's a very long tenure.
I've read elsewhere that about 5 years is a typical period of employment now.
Right, and I don't doubt that, just from my own personal experience. That's been about my average in the private sector working for a company. It's been about 5 or 6 years.
Really? Because I've been fired after 2 or 3 years.
They usually get me after 5 or 6 years, but you know, the point is you're right. If you have less tenure at a company, there's less incentive for the company to pay you. But the company's got to realize something, though. They need to look at it, and they don't, because they're only looking at the bottom line. Is that you're not going to be loyal to that company. Loyalty to companies is gone. I think most people would agree nowadays you don't have any incentive. There's no incentive for you to really.
Well, they don't want loyalty. They want new employees they can start off at basic.
Exactly. But, you know, ultimately, without loyalty, you know, and we're getting way off topic here on this, but, you know, without people, you lose institutional knowledge and you lose people with skill. And ultimately, it's going to hurt the business in the marketplace, because people who have the institutional knowledge and the skill are not going to stay with the company. And ultimately, the company may fail if you take a look at it, you know, from a very long-term point of view. But that's a whole nother philosophical discussion.
Well, we started this off, this segment on, or in the previous one, on labor and management. Do you think we've explored labor pretty much for this one? Because I have some stories here and questions about what's going on in the management end of this that is really kind of shocking. Even if you think that...
you're not talking about corruption?
Even that plus. even as they're squeezing the workers, they're ripping off the public. There are two stories that caught my eye in the last week. One is the demise of Refco.
Oh.
Okay. Just briefly from a news story, it says it took just 8 days for Refco Inc. to go from up and coming to down and out with a midnight bankruptcy announcement capping off the commodities broker's stunning collapse. If everybody knows what a commodities broker is, don't they? Commodities people are speculate in the price of goods, wheat, rice, whatever. And so the brokers would handle the transactions.
Now they make money whether the market goes up or down, depending on what
it's
they
the transaction,
get.
Right.
Did they have to get an advisory measure on whether they could gamble on that or not?
Nope. Okay. Nope.
What, did they need to get shareholder approval?
Nope.
Okay.
A consortium of private buyout firms led by J.C. Flowers and Company tentatively agreed late Monday to purchase Refco's commodities trading subsidiary for $768 million. Having trouble reading it today. Salvaging one of the few solvent divisions of the company, Refco and 23 of its subsidiaries then filed for Chapter 11 protection in U.S. bankruptcy court in Manhattan. The head of the consortium, J.C. Flowers, Christopher Flowers, said he hopes to rescue all of Refco, which tumbled ignominiously into bankruptcy after the company revealed October 10th that former chief executive Philip Bennett hid $430 million in bad debt from regulators and shareholders. Now, that's not chump change.
No, it's not.
What was that word?
Chump.
Ignominious. Wonderful.
I would have butchered it up. I would have done a bush on that one for sure.
On the same day in the news comes the news that federal prosecutors have significantly widened the criminal case. That's criminal, not
civil.
Criminal case against executives involved in the sale of questionable tax shelters by the accounting firm KPMG, a big one, filing dozens of criminal charges against a total of 19 defendants. The new indictment, which was presented in federal district court in Manhattan a few days ago, augments and replaces an indictment against 9 people filed in August. The revised indictment accuses 17 former KPMG executives, an outside lawyer, and an investment advisor, all, you know, upper scale, of scheming to defraud the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay, and they're not even brown people.
Well, first of all, you don't defraud Internal Revenue Service. You're defrauding the public
right.
when you do that, because that's where the money's supposed to go. Anyway, quote, they're doing this by devising, marketing, and implementing fraudulent tax shelters by preparing and causing to be prepared and filing and causing to be filed with the IRS false and fraudulent U.S. individual income tax returns containing the fraudulent tax shelter losses, and by fraudulently concealing from the IRS those shelters. The new indictment adds 43 counts of tax evasion and 2 counts of obstruction of IRS. Not in every case against every defendant to the single conspiracy count against the 9 defendants named in the... I would have written that differently. But anyway, the shelters... This is the numbers here. The shelters sold by KPMG have been under investigation for about 2 years by the IRS, Congress, and prosecutors. Prosecutors charged yesterday, or recently, that 4 shelters known as Blips, Flip, Opus, and SOS created $11 billion in fake losses and allowed wealthy individuals to avoid paying some $2.5 billion, that's with a B, billion in taxes to the government. Now, who is the criminal that you would want to squeeze for more money sooner than you would the guy making $20 an hour?
Is that 2 weeks worth of war in Iraq, $2 billion?
Could have had it.
What, something struck me in the names of these tax shelters. They have a certain Enronian sound to them, because didn't Enron have these programs called like Darth Vader and all these?
Exactly.
I mean, they gave them all these kind
of
things.
So they're having a game. They're playing on it. Yeah.
They're gaming the system, I think, what you're getting at here.
Well, anyway, so here we have the crime at the upper end, but the lower end being punished.
Right. They're, not only are they being punished, but they're being, I mean, it goes beyond being punished. They're being screwed. I mean, we, because we're not up there, we are being screwed.
And, not us particularly, but as a class, voting for it.
Yeah, right.
I have one question. Was Tom DeLay's mugshot in the paper?
I've seen it. I can't remember if it's in the paper.
I thought you saw it online. I'm not sure it ran. See, what is more and more...
He's smiling.
Right.
You know, the
that's called a...
Yeah, it's like up yours.
In the local Appeal Democrat newspaper, they run the felony arrests. Do they have, like, you know, can we, like, if we just had these on the community page, run the name of every corporate thug who gets arrested, and, like, right underneath the drunk driving, and I think people in this community will start paying attention to it. But see, it's not a petty theft. It's not a, you know, it's not a child molestation. It's something that affects, you know, it's as bad as molesting a child, but it's worse in terms of the economic impact. But nobody's going to read that. Nobody's going to care about that.
Right. It's too complicated.
It's too complicated.
You might have to read more than a paragraph.
But besides, it's not about
water items.
It's not about abortion. It's not about taking God out of schools.
Right. Well, you know, there's something that should be pointed out in this, you know, and I have to apologize. I'm about to say recommend a book, but I can't remember the title of it. I want to say the name of the book is Perfectly Legal. The author is David K. Johnston, and he is a writer, a columnist on tax matters for the New York Times. I read it about a year ago. And he basically explains how the tax system is set up to screw, you know, small people, but it gives the wink and the nod to large tax shelters. And the point of these tax shelters that really needs to be made is that a tax shelter, we could sit here, the three of us, if we were we're smart enough, if we had the money, devise a tax shelter. You basically write a letter to the IRS, and you say, this is the tax shelter that we devise, and it's then up to the IRS to prove that your tax shelter, if they even bother to investigate it, is illegal. So you can create a tax shelter, and the responsibility then falls on the IRS to prove that it's illegal. Legality doesn't have to be proved, but illegality has to be proved. So tax shelters are regularly drawn up, and they send a letter to the IRS, and they file it, and unless the IRS contests it, it's legal. So, I mean, the whole system is set up to screw the people on the bottom. The top people, they have to be convicted, whereas people on the bottom end, if you claim one more deduction than you should have, or you claim higher business expense because you operate the business out of your house, then they'll come after you with full guns. But the guys on the top end of the spectrum are given the pass because they can write these letters explaining their tax shelter, and the responsibility falls to the IRS to prove that it's illegal. And that's something that is in the story.
I've got a name of our shelter.
What's that?
More white jerks for Jesus, not for justice.
That's good. But also, the other reason that they get away with it is because they can afford the lawyers to hem and haw in court for a long time.
Right, exactly. Well, anyhow, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. It's where we're broadcast run. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to take a short break, and we want to thank Chuck Smith for joining us today. Chuck, thanks for joining us. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, just that getting back to sort of this theme about how working people aren't paying attention to what's going on because they're being bombarded by messages about Christian right-wing messages about really what should be happening in their lives. Working people need to think, and they need to make this promise. Promise not to think in their church if they don't pray in your school.
Very good.
Very good. And with that, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. Chuck, thanks for joining us again. I'm sure we'll have you back again.
Well, thank you very much.